my fine friends in the PMO world. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. This is a special bonus episode, Election Reaction. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker.
Hey, everybody. Stuart, I think this may be the precursor to live election coverage in 4 years, you and I, all night long.
That sounds miserable. Yeah. Yeah, full disclosure, we are going to talk about the election results, but we're not going to talk politics, right? We have some similar beliefs when it comes to politics, but we differ a little bit too, and so that's not what this is about. So this conversation was triggered by a tweet that you shared with me, Adam. So do you want to set it up and talk about what the topic is today?
Yeah, I think, and I'm just going to do a little kind of framing before I read this tweet, that we've known for a long time that the media landscape is changing at different levels of what we do in our lives. And what we witnessed yesterday was this changing media landscape's impact on something as large and impactful as a presidential election. And, you know, the tweet that I'm going to share, while the person that sent this tweet out has a vested interest in what he said being true, I don't think it changes the truth of the tweet. And it's Elon Musk, spoiler alert, that's who tweeted it. And for those of you that may live under a rock or something, he purchased what used to be Twitter and is now X, and did it with a lot of at least the rhetoric that he used around it was to make sure that he could protect free speech. He said he's a free speech absolutist. And he has tweeted a lot about the difference in public opinion versus what the media has shared. And what he said last night was the reality of this election was plain to see on X. While most legacy media lied relentlessly to the public, you are the media now. Please post your thoughts and observations on X and correct others when they're wrong, and we will have at least one place in the world where you can come to find the truth. I'd love your reaction to that, Stuart.
Well, first of all, the line, you are the media now, is going to be forever in infamy, right? It's very, I don't know, it elicits an emotional reaction to me, and it indicates a sea change that we're seeing. And, you know, I'm not sure if I fully agree with the statement that everyone is the media now, but what I do agree with 100% is that the mainstream media is no longer the primary influencer on society, right? And we've seen for, I don't know, it's been interesting to me. So I'll full disclosure, I spent last night, I stayed up till like 1 a.m. Eastern time, flipping between Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC. Because I want to get different perspectives.
It's so funny you say that, because you and I literally went through the same exercise, it sounds like.
Yeah, because I try to be balanced, right? Like a lot of people, I'm not extreme on either side. And there's some things I'd lean left, some things I'd lean right. But what was really interesting is the approaches seem to already be changing. Like, I think looking at, with the exception of MSNBC, I think what we've seen for the last several months is Fox News realizing they've got to come a little more central, and they're adding more left-wing opinions, legitimate left-wing opinions. And CNN, to their credit, has come more central too. They're adding a lot more right-wing opinions. MSNBC is still sort of extreme on the left, but I think they're realizing that they don't have the power they once did. And you gave an analogy earlier to me when we were chatting about this that I would love for you to share about why did they take so long to announce the results when it was obvious to everyone watching what was happening, when he'd already flipped Georgia and held North Carolina, and it looked really like the blue wall was going to fall, right? It looked like Pennsylvania was up by 4 or 5 points, Wisconsin, Michigan were all looking to flip red, but the mainstream media just sort of kept glossing over that. So tell the audience what you told me earlier.
Well, and I'll expand on a little bit of what you said. Not only was I flipping between those three different channels, but I also had Twitter open, and I was just refreshing Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. It'll always be Twitter in my brain, but I'll try to call it X. And what blew my mind is people were calling the election on X, I think it was 9 p.m. Eastern last night when I
Eastern,
saw
yeah.
the first calls on Twitter. And as I was looking at that, I'm sitting there waiting for the traditional media channels, the mainstream media channels that I was watching to call it. And yet they weren't just a little behind. They hadn't even called Georgia yet. And at one point I even saw that they said that a certain percentage of the vote was in, and that the disparity was larger than the remaining possible votes that could be out, but they wouldn't call the
But you
state.
wouldn't call it. Still
And
too early.
I'm sitting there doing the math, going, "I'm no mathematician, but this it's time." And what it made me feel like, Stuart, is I think about high school graduation, and a lot of people will go to a high school graduation party, and it's the type of thing where you really don't want that party to end. And I think the reason you don't want that party to end is because once that graduation party's over, the era is over. Your high school era is done. And now you have to
The
go.
reality has shifted, right? I mean,
Reality
it's
happens.
change of a seismic magnitude.
And you now have to go be productive in society. You have to go figure things out on your own. There's so, like, it's a huge change. And so everybody lingers at that graduation party for as long as they possibly can. And I kind of felt like last night was the mainstream media's graduation party, because this is the election. We all know that when Donald Trump has been involved in an election, the ratings of the different mainstream media outlets have gone through the roof. And I really think they were holding on to this moment, even though they knew the outcome. I think they were holding on to this moment as long as they could, because I don't think media will ever be the same. And I actually think a great indication of that was, how were the last 3 weeks spent from an appearance perspective by political candidates? The
And
mainstream
that's what
media
I
didn't
wanted to
get
talk
those
about.
interviews.
So I think where Elon probably got it wrong is saying that everyone is now the media, which is true to a degree. I think the real winner of this, if you look back to the last election, I really feel like really the last two, social media was massive influence on those, right? And you can argue whether there was outside influence on that from external countries and whatnot, but a lot of people were consuming more news from social media. I really think if you look at where Trump made gains with young folks, right? He closed the gap tremendously with young folks, which is traditionally has been more left-leaning, especially young males, right? If you look at that demographic specifically across races, right? Whether that was black, white, Hispanic, it didn't matter. He closed the gap dramatically with young males. And you got to say, well, in the last month or so, he's been on the All In podcast, Theo Vaughn's podcast, Joe Rogan's podcast, and Harris didn't do any of those, right? And so,
She did call her daddy.
well, this is true. But she avoided some of these that could have had a massive influence. And I think that sent a message to a lot of people. And it created fear, fed into this narrative that mainstream media had sort of created, especially the right-leaning media, that she had stuff to hide or she wasn't really in control and she wasn't capable of these sit-downs. Now she did go and sit down with Fox News and some other, more of the enemy camp kind of stuff. But that's not where people are getting their influence from. Look at how many people watched the Trump interview on Joe Rogan alone, right? It was more viewers combined than than all the debates, like the primary debates and the presidential debate. It was more viewers for an interview where you could sit down and actually hear unfiltered what was coming from a candidate. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, you got to see a side of him that the mainstream media hadn't shown you before. And I think that podcasting specifically is allowing that long form conversation that's never been available to the public before. So you can really get to know someone.
Yeah, I think the public has options now, right? Like the sources of information have been democratized, and that kind of goes back to Elon's tweet when he says, "You are the media now." That doesn't mean everyone is, but it means that somebody that's willing to do the research or gather information or tell the truth has the opportunity to become the media. And I believe there's been a major shift just in general in institutional trust over the last 5 years or so that has led to the fact that when Joe Rogan speaks, he has no choice. I shouldn't say he has no choice. I'm sure he's been wrong about things over time, but podcasters in general, their only incentive is to tell the truth because they'll lose listeners if they lie to you. And so it creates a different type of engagement because you're not engaging with an institution, you're engaging with an individual. And I think people listen to people, individuals that they trust.
Well, it's a conversation and it's a narrative, right? It's storytelling, and that's always going to work better than someone telling you what to think based on data or based on an opinion or whatever. And so, I think, any of these podcasters, including Joe Rogan, have some problematic stuff in their past, right? And none of them are
Absolutely.
perfect. But I think if you look at someone like Joe Rogan, he's willing to have anyone. I mean, invited Kamala Harris on, right, to the show, and she tried to negotiate a specific setup, and he said no. I mean, we're going to do it here, and we're going to do it for 3 hours, or we're not going to do it. But he offered her. I mean, he had Robert Kennedy on. He previously had Bernie Sanders on when he was running for the primary and
Yep.
stuff. So he's not out for an agenda. It doesn't seem whether he has political leanings. Like, he didn't come out and endorse anyone, like a
He
lot of
did.
celebrities.
He did yesterday. So he actually came
Okay,
out
I
and
missed
formally
that.
endorsed Donald Trump yesterday.
I missed that. But up until then, he really had been pretty silent and tried to be objective, right? And so you wonder too if his endorsement of Trump was in part a result of him sitting down for 3 hours with Trump and not with Harris, right? So I think this has an influence. But one of the things that I'm also seeing is there's a skepticism, right? The exit polls yesterday were really interesting. The most important factor for 34%, which was the highest percentage, the most important consideration when voting was protecting democracy. And it was interesting because it split both parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans. Top priority was not the economy, that was second, not immigration, that was like fourth or fifth, not reproductive rights, that was fourth or fifth. But it was protecting democracy because both sides feel like democracy was under attack. The right felt like it was under attack from the mainstream media and societal structures, and the left were thinking it was under attack from what the media had portrayed as a fascist dictator, right? And so people have seen through this charade, and they've said, "No, I reject this. I'm gonna get my sources." Like, I've never done what I did yesterday before, where I was looking at Fox News and MSNBC and CNN. That's a new behavior for me. I've always tried to be balanced, but I've never watched the election results that way before. And I talk to my kids and I talk to their friends, and they're no longer just distrusting everything that they're told. Like, they understand that you have to check the source and check the motivation of the source and maybe the funding of the source. And you have to look at what the other side is saying, because that's going to give you important context, and then you can make your own mind up. And I think that's why social media and podcasting as forums are going to continue to grow in market share. So we need to figure out, as DMOs, this is a destination marketing podcast, not a political podcast, what does that mean for us? What does that mean in terms of where we should shift budget, how we should communicate with people, what messaging we should be saying? So I'll throw
Well,
that to you. Give us all the answers.
yeah. Well, on that point specifically, you look at why I feel like last night was the graduation party for the mainstream media. And one of the issues is all these individual podcasters, or a lot of the individual podcasters or independent voices, had their own election live stream coverage through YouTube or their own channels or whatever. And so what happened there is that the percentage of people that tuned in to mainstream media channels, I can't wait to see what the ratings were compared to past elections, because so many of these independent voices that are trusted individually, people were going to those streams instead of the mainstream media channels. And I think that's a massive indication of what we can expect to happen in the future, because people got faster information on those independent channels than they did through the mainstream
Right.
media.
Twitter had record traffic.
Oh, yeah.
So record traffic, more broke every record they had. And so, yeah, I think it shifted. I think we've got to think about that. Like, where are people consuming information? Where are they spending their media time? We talked on previous episodes of the show about how the media landscape is becoming more fragmented. I'll tell you from our perspective, we're shifting budget. You know, obviously we've shifted from linear, we're still in linear, but we've shifted from linear to CTV. We're shifting increasingly into social, into YouTube. YouTube is a channel we 2, 3 years ago really didn't spend any money on, and now we're spending not insignificant money in YouTube. It's a platform that we like a lot. We're spending more in audio. We partner with specific podcasts that have a demographic or a psychographic that aligns with us. And we're spending money on not just a regular ad, but we're doing the reads from the host because it's more authentic, you know? And we did one a couple of years ago with it's gonna escape me now. Who's the guy that's on Ozark?
Jason Bateman.
Yeah, no, not him then. It was someone. It was someone from, I forget who we did it with, but it was a famous actor. Who's the guy in The West Wing?
Oh gosh, you're going way back. It's what's his last
Anyway,
name?
the
Yeah.
guy was from
Charlie
Ohio.
Sheen's dad, Martin Sheen. Is that who
Maybe
you're
not
talking
him.
about?
No, not the president guy. It was another. Anyway, it was someone that it's going to kill me that I don't remember who it is.
It was some famous person.
Some famous guy from Ohio, and he did a cold read about or a host read about Myrtle Beach. And he was like, da da da. And then he goes off script and he goes, you know, I've never been to Myrtle Beach, but growing up, every single one of my friends went to Myrtle Beach every summer and they absolutely loved it. And that wasn't something we scripted, but it's way more impactful, way more persuasive than any advertising we could do, right? Because it was authentic. It wasn't this manufactured authenticity that we try to create in the DMO world. It was authentic authenticity that came naturally from this guy. So
Yeah.
I wish I could remember who it was, but
Well, but there's two things, Stuart, that I think destinations need to be aware of as like what can we learn from this election as far as the media landscape goes. Number one, building a direct relationship with your potential visitor gives you the best chance at having trust with that visitor and influencing their actual decision makings. I think the independent podcasters have kind of demonstrated that. But number two is we need to define as destinations who is the mainstream media. So, for example, in the travel industry, has that historically been TripAdvisor? Would TripAdvisor be considered the mainstream media as far as the DMO industry goes? And I would say we need to make sure that some of the things that the mainstream media, whoever we identify that to be, that we take those independently and start doing those on our own and helping provide that information to the customer directly. And the second thing that I think we need to do is evaluate our media spend. And if the majority of our media spend is through channels that no longer have the same trust level with their audience, which I think was demonstrated a little bit in this, a lot in this election, then we may need to shift our budget away from what we view as mainstream media channels and more towards independent storytellers, people who already have a deeper level of trust with their audience than some of these mainstream channels do.
yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think if we continue to do the same thing we did last year, which is what mainstream, quote unquote, media has been doing, we just saw what happens if you don't evolve. If you don't adjust to meet consumer expectations and consumers' behavior, you're going to be obsolete. I mean, we're seeing that unfold right now with the media landscape. And so it's a cautionary tale to DMOs to say, what do I need to, what hasn't changed and what has changed? We need to ask those two questions constantly as DMOs. Because what hasn't changed is always important, and we can't ever forget the fundamentals, right? People love to travel. People are looking for experiences. They're looking for value a lot of times. That, you know, what matters to them. Like the quality of the product, that they're not wasting their money, that social proof is important to them. There's a lot of things that that won't change in the consumer's behavior or their mindset. But what is changing is how they consume their information, how they get inspired, how they research, how they travel, you know, who they travel with. Some of those things are changing. And so we need to be focus on what isn't changing, but also adjusting to what is changing and staying ahead of it. And as Wayne Gretzky always said, we need to be skating towards the puck, where the puck is going to be, not where it is today. And we can see where these trends are heading, right? So we need to be positioning ourselves now so that a year or 2 years from now, we're right where those consumers are going to be.
There's another really important point to this, Stuart, and that's that if we look at the mainstream media, what their promise has been over the years is clarity and truth and fast information and all of those different types of things. But when you look at their predictions compared to what the actual results were, and to see that, I mean, Donald Trump even won the popular vote, which has, I don't think that's happened with a Republican in I don't know how long. Actually, I think it was 2004. But that happened, and I think that speaks to the fact that the mainstream media didn't have a good pulse on the audience that they were trying to reach and influence. And so I also think for destinations, you're going to end up in a situation where if you're not communicating with your visitors, if you're not doing the necessary research on an annual basis to understand what's driving them and where they're consuming content and things like that, you could end up in a situation where you have one message that you've been doing for years and years and years that no longer resonates with today's traveler. And I mean, we just saw that in 4 years, the American people can change significantly what their opinions and what their priorities are. And I think that doesn't just go for political priorities, that goes for travel priorities as well. And without keeping that pulse, you may end up in a situation where your message is one thing and the audience wants something completely different.
Yeah, you've always got to stay aware of your consumer and their expectations and their desires and behaviors, but I'd also say the other cautionary tale in this is the media has been caught in an echo chamber, right? They've been caught sort of feeding themselves this narrative that they're righteous or they're doing the right thing. Whether you're on either side, if you're a Fox News or an MSNBC, you believe you're doing the right thing and that it's justified and it's in the in you're doing it for democracy and for the soul of the country, right? You neither of them believe they're on the wrong side of this, but when you surround yourself, the analogy I'd make is with the DMOs. When you as a DMO surround yourself with like-minded people that all think the same way you think, you're going to get in trouble at some point. You've got to have challenges in your team, and if you don't have them in your team, you've got to surround yourself with your own group of influencers, right? A lot of people will say have your own personal board of directors. Everyone needs a board of directors with some disagreeable people in it that don't see the world the way you see it. You don't know what your blind spots are if you're only talking to people that think the way you think.
Yeah,
And
let me ask
so,
you a question on that. Is that okay? So,
well, let me finish the point
yeah,
real
go ahead.
quick. So that's one of the reasons this show exists, right? Destination Discourse exists to give our community, our industry, a platform to disagree. We can disagree agreeably about things, but that's the only way we can grow and learn and become something better tomorrow than we were today. So that's a lesson that I think the media is waking up today and realizing they should have probably paid attention to a year or two ago.
Totally agree. And I want to ask you a question on the point that you made. And I'm always hesitant to give you something that might inflate your ego because I'd hate to see it float away. But I'm going to do it. One of the things that I've seen with you, Stuart, is you're one of the smarter people that thinks differently in the industry than most of the people I've interacted with. And yet the people I see you surround yourself with that you respect the most are the people that will challenge your opinions and challenge your ideas. And it's kind of a paradox because a lot of people believe that to be the smartest person in the room, you have to demonstrate that by not allowing anyone to challenge your opinions or ideas, when in fact it's the exact opposite. That if you're willing to hear other people's ideas and listen to other people and be challenged, it makes both people in the conversation better. And so for DMOs to create their own echo chamber is also a big problem. You need people that will challenge you because it makes both you and the person challenging you better.
Yeah, I think it's the only way we can learn and evolve. Like, all I know is I know nothing, right? And sometimes I may feel like I know more than the person I'm talking to about specific subjects, but I go into every conversation with the assumption that person knows things that I don't know that will help me become a better, smarter decision maker tomorrow than I am today. You know, and to assume we're right about 100% of things is one of the most naive positions we can be in. So we've got to believe we can improve, and the only way we improve is through new experiences and information. And so if you only surround yourself with the same homogenous group of people that create an echo chamber, you're never going to grow as a person. Like, that I grow through challenging conversations that question my beliefs, my assumptions. And if we're rigid with where we are, then you may as well hang it up and go home, because you're going to be in this monotony for the rest of your life. So, no, I love people that challenge me. I think that's why you and I have gone along. It's why the show exists. It's why we've invited folks like Sarah Peter and Will Seckham on the show, you know, and others, because they have challenged me over the years, and I really appreciate that and encourage it. So, we got to wrap up, Adam, but this is a really cool kind of last minute thrown together take on the election. And I'd love for us to do more of these sort of real-time reactions to things that happen in the zeitgeist and see how they relate to the DMO world. But they want to get in contact with you, Adam. Where can they do that?
And last thing, and I'll shut my mouth after this, but I want everyone in the industry to know that we know the election is a touchy subject, and we know that it's something that a lot of people might be afraid to address in a discussion like this. And we don't want to alienate anyone that has a view one side or the other, but this show is designed to have the uncomfortable conversations and to address the uncomfortable topics. And we're going to do more and more of that. And our goal is to invite everybody into the discussion instead of having a discussion and asking everybody else to just accept our opinion. If you want to reach me, adam@relicagency.com or Adam Stoker on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with any of you. And please come on the show. Let's have an uncomfortable conversation.
Well, Adam, I don't know anyone who's better at making people uncomfortable than you. So I appreciate you being my partner in crime on this crazy journey. And yeah, please reach out if you have any topic, or you just want to suggest a topic that you'd like to see us or others discuss, or you want to nominate a friend of yours that has opinions to be on the show. We have a stack of amazing folks lined up over the next few episodes, but we want more. You know, we want to hear from diverse voices in the industry, and we're not afraid to tackle any of these conversations. I think that's why this exists. It's not affiliated with anyone for a reason, right? We can get away with being a little more edgy in the conversation than perhaps if we were affiliated with one of the major monoliths in the industry. So this is a show that's designed by the DMO industry for the DMO industry. And so please come join the conversation. It's been a lot of fun so far, but it'll be a lot more fun if you're involved. So if you want to reach out to me, LinkedIn's the best place. Stuart Butler is my name, Stuart. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
I feel like I've formed an opinion